All right, hello. I'm Joshua Mack, and today I'll be talking about runtime strategies and task scheduling of software-defined radio on heterogeneous hardware. To give some background on myself and the group I'm representing, we're part of a research collaboration between a few different universities, as well as some industry partners. And in terms of the people who specifically contributed to the content you'll be seeing here today, there's definitely a lot more people than just myself. And so for some motivation on what brought this research collaboration together, it's pretty well known that homogeneous processors, while being easy to program, are leaving quite a bit of performance on the table. If you look at just gigaops per watt and look at the trends as you proceed from just typical homogeneous scalar processors up through to vector processors and GPUs and finally custom ASICs. Along with that increased power efficiency, all of these more specialized solutions typically leave a lot of usability on the table. They're incredibly difficult to program and to generally adapt for new applications. And so one of the trends in computing at the moment is to investigate so-called heterogeneous SoCs, where we try to leverage some of the benefits that come from these more specialized architectures by combining mixtures of heterogeneous processing elements and then seeing what we can do to make sure that they're still easy to program and use, because generally speaking, it's very easy to build a complicated system that performs great, but no one wants to actually use. And so building an effective and usable heterogeneous chip is essentially the goal of this entire collaboration. And so we're actually going for trying to build a general purpose heterogeneous chip, though, because in a certain sense, that's actually a bit of an oxymoron with how specialized your accelerator choices need to be for your applications of interest in order to actually extract any meaningful performance. You need to actually tailor your heterogeneous chip for the applications you're planning on running. And typically these are being referred to as so-called domain-specific SoCs, where a domain is just a set of applications that you're broadly interested in running, which in our case is along the lines of software-defined radio, comms, radar. And we're hoping that by focusing in on a single domain of applications, that will give us the flexibility to really develop tooling and improve ease of use. And ultimately, what we would like to have come out of this isn't just a single DSOC or domain-specific SoC, but actually a methodology for, given a domain, how should you go about designing a DSOC for it. So looking at kind of the software developer's point of view, it's been broadly speaking possible to view computing as the interaction of these three distinct layers. The hardware that actually runs the computation, the resource management layer that acts as an operating system or something that serves as the middleware between applications and the hardware, and then the user applications on top of that. And we don't fundamentally want to change or get rid of this model, but when you think about this in the context of building a DSOC, you can find yourself asking a lot of questions. So first, what accelerators should we include in the hardware? There's a lot of trade-offs to be made in terms of, should you dedicate the silicon area towards that one particular accelerator, or should you instead dedicate that area towards a mixture of other accelerators? And so knowing just what PEs to include on an SoC is in general not always a clear cut problem. And once we have the accelerators there, how do we launch work on those accelerators? So is there some standardized interface we can provide? Are they going to be all connected via an on-chip network? Can the nodes themselves all request data, or do they all need to have data pushed to them? What exactly is this resource management layer scheduling? Because clearly there needs to be a scheduling component if we ever want to actually use the hardware effectively with a mixture of workloads all sharing the heterogeneous hardware. But while operating systems have been very successful building their unit of scheduling abstraction around threads, an accelerator doesn't necessarily have, you know, a program counter or stack pointer or register file or any real coherent unit of execution context. So, or even, you know, a lot of accelerators may not even be preemptable in any sense. So there's a lot of questions that come up in how to deal with that. From the application side, how do we integrate new applications? Typical CPU applications are fairly easy to integrate at this point, but for accelerators, you generally just give someone a data sheet and kind of say good luck. And finally, how do we debug accelerators? So if the data coming out of an accelerator isn't quite what you expect, what kinds of tools can we provide to help you introspect into the operations being performed so that it's not just a black box that you have to wrap with printf debugging? And so broadly speaking, we have we're addressing this with the following envisioned architecture, where each of the components are color-coded according to the layer and the stack that they correspond to. And looking just at the compile time framework, we presented our approach for that at last year's FOSDEM in the LLVM dev room regarding how do we integrate new applications. And the short story there, just as a quick summary, works by taking a user's application and then utilizing dynamic tracing to analyze the actual runtime behavior of the application rather than needing to rely purely on static analysis. And based on that, we are able to refactor applications into what we call application DAGs and FAT binaries, where each application is represented as a directed acyclic graph, where the nodes of the graph represent computations and the vertices represent dependency relationships. And each of the nodes in the graph can have multiple different implementations available, like the FFT node shown in red may have a CPU implementation and an accelerator implementation, thus giving us the FAT binary structure as described. And so this year, we want to focus a bit more on the second half of the problem of given applications, how do we schedule and launch work onto a pool of heterogeneous resources? And going from kind of the high level abstract view to our actual implementation, we have built a runtime that we call CEDAR. So CEDAR stands for Compiler Integrated Extensible DSoC Runtime. The broad translation of the previous architecture to a more concrete implementation is shown on the right side here. And the key features of CEDAR are that it is a Linux user space runtime. So it's broadly compatible with basically any Linux-based system. It supports allocation and scheduling for arbitrary mixtures of these task-based workloads. It has easy hooks for integration of new application schedulers and hardware accelerators, so each of the three layers that we discussed earlier. And then along with the ability to be flexible and configurable, it has a lot of hooks for collecting detailed execution statistics and hardware counters about task executions so that you can make informed design decisions when building a DSoC. So as mentioned, the kind of implementation of the architecture from before is shown on the right side here. The left half shows the compilation workflow and the right half shows the runtime workflow. The broad process overall works by receiving the JSON application DAG and shared object binary from the compiler and sending that to the CEDAR job submission process. And then pretty similar to an HPC job submission system, the job submission process communicates to the CEDAR runtime daemon, which essentially just runs continuously in the background. And then as it receives new jobs from the job submission process, parses them, injects them into its various ready queues and state management, and then begins launching the work on various CPUs or accelerators using whatever user provided scheduling heuristic and writing the output logs to a file. And looking specifically at how the runtime itself works, so this daemon process works by spawning one thread per PE in the underlying hardware, where each thread is responsible for managing the workload of its associated PE. So for instance, in a platform with three CPUs and two FFTs, that would be five worker threads. And the management thread schedules to each of these workers using the user-provided heuristic. And once the heuristic decides on a PE allocation, it pushes the work to be done onto the input queue of the corresponding worker thread. And as that thread notices the work is available, it pops it off, does the computations, and then pushes the task back onto the output queue so that the management thread can update its dependency logic. As to our current state so far, we've tested a number of different applications in kind of the radar and comms domain, including radar correlators, pulse Doppler radar, Wi-Fi, temporal interference mitigation, and what we're calling RF convergence, which is a single application that combines comms and radar. We've implemented a number of different scheduling policies, from simple round robin and random schedulers to earliest finish time and imitation learning based policies that use either deep neural networks or regression trees with the specific implementation we're using provided down there at the bottom. We've tested a few different accelerators, primarily FFTs and some matrix multiply units. And then we've run on various hardware architectures. So lots of different x86 platforms, as well as the Xilinx ZC102 FPGA and the Odroid XU3 ARM development board. So to look at basic usage here, we're going to go through just a small demo showing how Cedar works in practice using the Wi-Fi TX application. So what we're going to do here is first look at the command line arguments for when you're starting the Cedar binary itself. So we can see we need to provide a log file and a config file. And looking at the config file we have here, we have the worker thread section that lets you specify how many threads to spawn, as well as what type of thread each of them are. So if one manages an FFT, then it is an FFT thread. We can see we have the PE level queuing enabled that was mentioned earlier. And then we're using the EFT, or earliest finish time scheduler. And so we will go ahead and start the Cedar daemon process. And we can see that the logs will be collected in the experiment zero folder. And now looking at the job submission process, we can see we need to specify what DAG file are we submitting, as well as how many instances of it to instantiate. And so we'll start here just with a single Wi-Fi TX job. And we can see here that the runtime receives the JSON, opens up the corresponding shared object, and then begins executing Wi-Fi TX, where you can see we're just transmitting a fixed string and then encoding 10 symbols based off that. And then the job completes and Cedar reports that the overall DAG has finished running. And so from here, we can take a look at the timing trace log format. And we can see that various information is collected, like which application and which task within that application was run, what was the name of the app, what was the name of the function that got called, which resource did the task get scheduled to, and finally, what was the start and stop time, and correspondingly, the difference gives you the execution time. And now to stress the system a little bit more and really provide the scheduler some opportunities to use the hardware, we're going to repeat the same experiment But with now 20 instances of Wi-Fi TX rather than just one. And from there, we'll be able to generate a Gantt chart showing the utilization across the three processing, the three CPU cores. And so we can see with running 20 instances here, the same behavior is pretty much observed. There are 20 independent DAGs that are allocated and scheduled successfully. And then we can now transfer the resulting log file back to a host system so that we can plot and generate a chart for it. And then we can see here that the make span was about 47 milliseconds. And then looking at the chart here, that seems to about work out. So each of the cores has these boxes on it indicating the various tasks that were scheduled onto it at each time step within the simulation or emulation. And then the colors of the boxes correspond to the ID of the application that was run. And so kind of with a basic usage out of the way, we now want to move on to kind of some more specific features that we think are important to emphasize for the software-defined radio community. And one of the, you know, first features that we support that comes to mind is what we call streaming. And the main motivation behind this, as I'm sure anyone familiar with GNU Radio knows, is that a lot of RF applications operate on very steady streams of input frames, where there's not necessarily a well-defined start and end for an application, but instead there's just kind of an infinite event loop that continues to run as applications are processed. And so one of the features that we built into Cedar is the ability to, rather than instantiate multiple different DAG instances of one application and treat that as the process multiple frames, take a single instantiated DAG and reuse the nodes in that with new input data so that we can reduce communication overhead, reduce memory initialization overhead, and support more of a pipeline-based execution to increase, you know, overall throughput and resource utilization with just a broad diagram of this shown on the right side, where as we can see in each time step, the frame from the previous execution propagates diagonally down the screen. And we can see that by frame four, the pipeline of this four node DAG is full. And so to provide a demo of how this works, it's quite similar to the previous usage. So from that sense, it's quite easy to integrate. We can see here that we're going to be running the temporal mitigation or the temporal interference mitigation application. And looking at the JSON here, we can see that we have the stream enable flag set and that we will be running 20 frames of input, which is equivalent in the previous example to running 20 distinct Wi-Fi jobs. But just with one instantiated DAG instance. And we can see here that we'll be using the DNN scheduler. So this scheduler is built using imitation learning and is following the behavior that was shown in the paper, described in the earlier paper. And then when we're submitting the DAG here, we'll see we only submit one instance because the actual specification of how many frames to run is taken care of by the JSON. And we can see here that this particular application has an output file as well as the standard log directory. So looking in the log directory, we can see that a single timing trace was still generated. And then looking at the application output here, we can see that it chose to print output for only the first five frames in this case. Where the output is complex vectors with real imaginary parts. And then now copying the logs back over to the host system for plotting. We can illustrate the pipelining that's possible. So we can see, for instance, by zooming into the beginning here, that the second frame begins processing in purple pretty much immediately after the red frame finishes ending, before the red frame continues on to its second node. And that continues throughout the rest of the Gantt chart shown. So moving on to the next feature, one of the main things, again, mentioned earlier that we want to support is enabling very low-level and fine-grained performance profiling and workload characterization. And so what we've done to support this is we've added support for PAPI counters in Cedar, which PAPI, for those who are unfamiliar, is a very common API for accessing performance counters in Linux. And we can access all of these counters at the granularity of individual kernels or DAG nodes within our applications. So for instance, the ZC102 FPGA we develop on has 113 different counters that available, ranging from everything from counting the number of instructions executed in cache misses to the number of branches installed cycles. And just to kind of illustrate the kind of analysis that's possible with these counters, we have the table shown in the bottom half of the slide with four different applications. And we can see that by raw instruction count, the RF convergence application is by far the most complex application being run here, as well as by looking at the percentage of those that are data cache loads, we can infer that it's also the most data intensive, whereas the radar correlator is, for instance, the least data intensive. And so with that, we are excited to be able to use these kinds of performance counters to gain insights that allow us to really finally craft workloads to stress specific aspects of the scheduler or dispatch or memory utilization. And then again, it's worth noting that, as shown in the call out on the bottom of radar correlator, that we actually have these statistics at the level of individual DAG nodes, and the tables here are just cumulative values for saving space. So to show how this works, we'll have one more demo here. We'll see that in the config file, we have the used the PAPI feature enabled, and then we will be collecting the five performance counters shown in the list here. So instructions, number of branches, number of branch misses, number of L1 data cache loads, and data cache load misses. And we'll be using the EFT scheduler in this case. So starting up the Cedar daemon, we will inject a mixture of the RF convergence application as well as Wi-Fi TX, both to show the ability to interleave multiple applications at the same time and to help stress the system a bit. And so we'll be seeing that we're going to inject one RF convergence and five Wi-Fi TX. The Wi-Fi TX finished quite quickly because they're fairly short jobs, and then the RF convergence takes a little bit longer, but it finishes up right there as well. At which point we can look at our directory, and we can see that there is a performance statistics CSV file that was generated that we can copy over to our host system for further analysis with your favorite CSV processing toolkit. We're just going to do a brief exploration with Excel here. And we can see that expanding out the column headings, that we have the node that was run, as well as all of the different performance counters that are applicable for it. And as this is currently looped in through our logging infrastructure, we also get all of the boilerplate from that as well. But adjusting that is going to be one of the goals in the future. And finally, last but not least, accelerator integration. As mentioned earlier, it's worth specifically calling out here how we do it. So one of the main problems that comes up when you are designing a runtime like this is that accelerators generally can't run threads. And so to get around this, we have built a system where the accelerators themselves are managed by supporting CPU threads, and then the scheduler schedules to that accelerator by pushing onto the queue of the associated worker thread. And then that worker thread coordinates all of the data transfers that are necessary to and from the accelerator, as well as awaits completion. And so the exact data transfer methodology depends a lot on the hardware platform of the accelerator in question. But in our case, we are using user space DMA buffers provided by the library shown at the bottom, and DMA engines in FPGA programmable logic. And so, for instance, to run on the FFT, we copy data into the DMA buff, which allows us to get around limitations of the OS page size. We configure the DMA engine. We transfer to the accelerator, receive the results back, and then copy out from the UDMA buff. And so finally, to give a brief demo of this, we're going to run with one FFT accelerator enabled using the EFT scheduler. We're going to run an FFT streaming test. And in this instance, to really get to that question of, isn't the accelerator always the best option? We have two configurations here. One JSON file only has the platforms enabled for the accelerator, and the other has support for running the FFTs on both the CPU or the accelerator based on the scheduler's dynamic decisions. And so we're going to see here in a workload with, in this case, 50 instances of each of the DAGs, each processing 20 frames, whether we can have better performance on having the accelerator only choice or having the CPU and accelerator available. And so we will go ahead and copy the log files back out from the board, and then generate the two Gantt charts. We can see that the accelerator only had a make span of about 300 milliseconds, whereas the mixture, the ability to mix implementations, had a make span of about 277. So we can know approximately what to expect, but looking now at the generated Gantt charts, we can see that indeed we do have overall execution time savings by sometimes actually falling back to the CPU rather than always using the accelerator. And so we're a little bit short on time, but the main outcome that we want to get with the slide is that there are a number of different types of users that are that we think would be interested in using the Cedar framework, ranging from performance programmers who are willing to dig deep into all of the hardware API calls and read all the data sheets and really maximally manually optimize their applications for their underlying hardware, all the way up to, you know, what we're calling performance users who may have very strict execution and power constraints, but may not be willing to actually, you know, formally guide the compilation in any sense. And what we would really like to get out of the crowd here is some insights into what kind of user are you, what are your needs, and how can we build an environment that's actually useful for you.